Good evening, everyone. Happy New Year. You're listening to UR Radio at Western North Carolina Community Media Center. I hope you stay with us for the next hour as we explore the teachings of Eckhart Tolle and his best-selling book, A New Earth, Awakening to Your Life's Purpose. Our show is called Conscious Co-Creating, Tools to Empower You. And I hope you join me every Thursday evening from 8 to 9 Eastern. My name is Louisa Dyer, and I am a holistic counselor and a metaphysical author. And if you'd like to know more about who I am, feel free to visit my websites, louisadyer.com and louisadyer.net. And during the second half of the show, you can submit any questions or comments through the Facebook page called Conscious Co-Creating Online Radio, and I will do my best to respond during the show. My intention with this show is to have a really, really good time while being as inspired as possible and sharing all the tools that there are so that every one of us who wants to can actually learn how to thrive instead of just survive. I learned a long time ago that survival is highly overrated. But anyway, I'm into thriving, and that's what I want the show to be about. So if you're interested in personal growth, spiritual evolution, however you think of that, or if you just want a life that's filled with more joy and peace, it's definitely possible, and it really only awaits our choice to make it so. And what we discuss tonight will hopefully inspire you to begin living the life you've longed for, even more than you already have been. And so over the last couple of months, we've been exploring the work of David Hawkins and Byron Katie in particular, who are two of my favorite teachers. And we've remembered that all truth is knowable, and that how we ask questions really makes a difference in not only the answers we get, but the accuracy of those answers. We've also learned that most, if not all, of the stressful thoughts that we think aren't even true. And when we actually question those painful thoughts, and our mind realizes that we're thinking something that isn't true that's causing us to suffer, then it's really easy, those thoughts sort of just leave us alone. They go away because they're not productive. And we've actually heard, if you read any of the spiritual literature, no matter in what tradition, you will hear from pretty much every spiritual teacher throughout time that all suffering is optional. And that's really what I like talking about in this show, is how to discover where the suffering is coming from and what to do about it so that we can really just let it go and open up to the truth of who we are in our core and our divine being. And so even though all suffering is optional, according to the enlightened ones among us, so much of humanity continues to suffer much of the time. And so the many books that I've talked about, a few of them that David Hawkins wrote, beginning with Power versus Force, and also Byron Katie's work that focuses on loving what is, those two authors, if you just read those two authors and really grok what they're saying, you will know how to recognize suffering for what it is and how to release it. And basically what it comes down to is whenever we're willing to have the courage to face whatever's behind our suffering and get present with it, then presence is what actually removes the suffering. It's like bringing light into a dark room. You bring light into a dark room and the darkness goes away. How does that happen? Well, because the darkness is just an absence of light. So you bring light to it and the darkness goes away. Fear is like that. If you bring enough love to fear, then fear goes away. Why? Because fear isn't real. It's just an absence of love. It's the same thing with suffering. What suffering really is about is separation, a feeling, a sense, a belief in separation from our own true self, from the core of our being, from the divinity that we are inside, from the source energy that the whole universe is created from. Suffering comes from feeling or believing that we are separate from that. And so anything that helps us get more present means that we're back in touch with that. And as we do that, suffering disappears, just like bringing light into a dark room. And so the way that David Hawkins and Byron Katie present information, the way that they teach to release that suffering is very different. And yet both of them lead us to a very similar place of peace inside. I think that's one of the greatest things about being alive right now, is that there are so many tools available. If one way doesn't suit us, then we can just try another until we find something that actually resonates with us and that feels like a fit. It's a wonderful time to be alive. Any other point in human history, there's never been the access to information from enlightened ones that there is right now. Literally, almost everyone in the world has access to this information, and that's a great it's a great opportunity. It carries great potential, and it's a very exciting time to be alive for that reason. And tonight, what I really want to do is talk about Eckhart Tolle, and he offers yet another perspective on where suffering comes from and how to be free of it. And all three of these authors that I've mentioned, David Hawkins, Byron Katie, and Eckhart Tolle, they all have websites where you can explore the numerous offerings that they've given to reduce humanity's suffering. All three of them are clearly enlightened beings. And just hearing how they woke up is inspiring. And, you know, just hearing the hell, literally, that they lived in before awakening gives me much hope for myself when I'm living in hell, or anybody else that I see living in hell, that they did it. We can do it. Each of us can evolve beyond whatever pain it is that we may be experiencing right now. And that's really the message of all the enlightened ones, is that there's really nothing to gain. There's nothing to get. There's just a matter of becoming more and more present. Because as we do that, then presence is what shifts everything. And that's actually a lot of what this book, A New Earth, by Eckhart Tolle, is about. And I'm probably only going to get through chapters 1 through 4 tonight, and hopefully we'll continue with it next week. I'd love some audience participation. So please, if you have any questions or comments or suggestions, you can submit those on the Conscious Co-Creating online radio Facebook page. So if you have another browser open, you can do that while you're listening to the show. And I'll be able to respond during the second half of the show. And I don't know how many of you really know, but a couple years ago, Oprah Winfrey actually did an incredible series where she had Eckhart Tolle came on and they videoed it. And I think they did 10 weeks. I think it was probably 2 years ago. And they talked about the book in that 10-week series, and she was interviewing Eckhart Tolle, and it was really quite amazing. And those videos are still available on Oprah's website. I know I've watched them a time or two since that show was on, and I would highly recommend, if you really want to know what it is to look into the eyes of someone who's enlightened, you can feel that and see that when you're sitting there just watching the videos with Eckhart Tolle. And they're really quite interesting. So basically, we're going to at least look at the first 4 chapters of this book tonight. And basically what Tolle is doing in this book is he's talking about what the ego is, the content of it as well as the structure of it, and he's showing us how to recognize what the ego is, so that we can begin dismantling it. Because as long as we are completely ruled by ego, there's no room for us to allow presence into our lives. And so the idea then is to notice what the ego is, be aware of it, and the awareness itself begins to make the space for even more awareness to come in. And that's actually how the ego is undone. Actually, I just told you everything that's in chapters 1 through 4. But I'm going to go through it. I'm going to go through it a little bit more specifically so that you can really hear how an enlightened being talks about it. And I want to start with the first chapter of this book is actually called The Flowering of Human Consciousness. And it begins with an evocation that is both beautiful and incredibly inspiring. And I'd like to just read that. And this is page one, chapter one, in Eckhart Tolle's A New Earth. Earth, 114 million years ago, one morning just after sunrise, the first flower ever to appear on the planet opens up to receive the rays of the sun. Prior to this momentous event that heralds an evolutionary transformation in the life of plants, the planet had already been covered in vegetation for millions of years. The first flower probably did not survive for long, and flowers must have remained rare and isolated phenomena, since conditions were most likely not yet favorable for a widespread flowering to occur. One day, however, a critical threshold was reached, and suddenly there would have been an explosion of color and scent all over the planet, if a perceiving consciousness had been there to witness it. Much later, those delicate and fragrant beings we call flowers would come to play an essential part in the evolution of consciousness of another species. Humans would increasingly be drawn to and fascinated by them. As the consciousness of human beings developed, flowers were most likely the first thing we came to value that had no utilitarian purpose, that is to say, was not linked in some way to survival. Seeing beauty in a flower could awaken humans, however briefly, to the beauty that is an essential part of their innermost being, their true nature. The first recognition of beauty was one of the most significant events in the evolution of human consciousness. The feelings of joy and love are intrinsically connected to that recognition. Without our fully realizing it, flowers would become for us an expression in form of that which is most high, most sacred, and ultimately formless within ourselves. Flowers, more fleeting, more ethereal, and more delicate than the plants out of which they emerged, would become like messengers from another realm, like a bridge between the world of physical form and the formless. They not only had a scent that was delicate and pleasing to humans, but also brought a fragrance from the realm of spirit. Using the word enlightenment in a wider sense than the conventionally accepted one, we could look upon flowers as the enlightenment of plants. In the case of a flower, a crystal, precious stone, or bird, even someone with little or no presence can occasionally sense that there is more there than the mere physical existence of that form, without knowing that this is the reason why he or she is drawn toward it, feels an affinity with it. So this book is about the flowering of consciousness, the inhumanity, the flowering itself of humanity. And he's making this analogy that he winds up using throughout the whole book about that it's beauty that awakens that love and that joy in us, that it's love that awakens the joy and the beauty in us, that it's joy that awakens the beauty and the love. Those things are the same. And whatever it is, however it is, that we can open ourselves to experience that incredible formless state of appreciation, of joy, of beauty, then we're opening ourselves up to be in that flowering. And so what this book is about is really evolving beyond the suffering that humans have so taken for granted. Tolle actually says that the purpose of this book is to bring about a shift in consciousness. And that's what he is writing for, is to bring about that shift in consciousness. And what he's very clear about is that it can only awaken those who are ready. And not everyone is ready yet, but many are. And the really magnificent, beautiful thing is that with each person who awakens, the momentum in the collective consciousness grows, and it becomes easier for others. Hawkins talks about this too, how we raise the level of the sea, as it were, and everybody else gets to float on it. And if you don't know what awakening means, you can read this book and find out. And all you need is a glimpse of what that is, and it initiates it, and it's irreversible. I love David Hawkins actually says that human beings are destined to wake up, to be enlightened. Byron Katie, I don't think, addresses it like that. But Eckhart Tolle certainly says that same thing in this book. And I want to read one more little thing that he writes here on page 7 in this book before we take a little musical break. And that is that an essential part of the awakening is the recognition of the unawakened you, the ego, as it thinks, speaks, and acts, as well as the recognition of the collectively conditioned mental processes that perpetuate the unawakened state. That is why this book shows the main aspects of the ego and how they operate in the individual as well as in the collective. This is important for two related reasons. The first is that unless you know the basic mechanics behind the workings of the ego, you won't recognize it, and it will trick you into identifying with it again and again. The second reason is that the act of recognition itself is one of the ways in which awakening happens. When you recognize the unconsciousness in you, that which makes the recognition possible is the arising consciousness. It is the awakening. You cannot fight against the ego and win, just as you cannot fight against darkness. The light of consciousness is all that is necessary, and you are that light. Isn't that beautiful? I think that's just so inspiring. I don't know that we're ever going to get through all chapters 1 through 4 at this rate, but nonetheless, I want to take a little musical break here, and we're going to hear one of my favorite songs here, and it is Here to Hear singing. It's one of my favorite conscious groups. Thank you. And this song is called Time for a Change, and I'm hoping you let it activate the right side of your brain and maybe bring your body and your soul into a little simpatico movement. And I will see you again in a few moments. Where my heroes at? Where my soldiers at? Where my presidents and citizens and all their chests? Where my artists at? Where my dreamers at? Where my activists and hippie chicks and I know that we can do it, we can change the world. I know that we can be it, we can be the change we like to see. Can change the world. I know that we can be it. We can be the change we like to see. It's time for change. It's time for change. Where my farmers at? My corporations at? Where my scientists and pharmacists, my dealers at? Where my mothers at? Where my father's at? Where my human beings with beating hearts? Let's rock this track. I know that we can do it. We can do change the world. The world. I know that we can be it. We can be the change we like to see. I know that we can do it. We can change the world. I know that we can be it. We can be the change we like to see. It's time for change. Welcome back. You are listening to UR Radio, Conscious Co-Creating Tools to Empower You. This is Reverend Louisa Dyer, and I am so happy to be here with you this evening and wishing everybody a very happy new year. We are broadcasting from Western North Carolina Community Media Center, and I'm really hoping that I'm going to be able to do the Facebook page for Conscious Co-Creating Online Radio. So if you would like to comment or give suggestions or ask questions, you're welcome to go to that page. We are talking tonight about Eckhart Tolle, specifically his book called A New Earth, Awakening to Your Life's Purpose. And it really what the book is, well, the book is about literally that, how to wake up and know who you really are instead of thinking that you're your ego, or you're your stuff, or you're your job, or, you know, it's about waking up to the truth of who you really are, the formless divine source energy that everything living really is. And what we're doing tonight is we're looking at the first four chapters of that book, hopefully. And so what he is doing in these first four chapters is he's really talking about, in the first chapter, he talks a great deal about the flowering of human consciousness and what that means and what our potential is. And it's very, very, very inspiring. And then what he does in chapters 2, 3, and 4 is he really takes the ego apart. He looks at it, he tells you what it is, what it isn't, how to move beyond it. And pretty much in one sense, he's actually saying, you know, the ego doesn't even really exist, but it does exist because we have bought into it and we think that it does. So it's sort of a very interesting paradox, the whole thing. So we've talked about how he's really saying that his purpose in writing this book is to bring about a shift in consciousness, and that actually reading the book accelerates that. It starts that if it hasn't already begun. And if it has begun, it actually accelerates it. And so it's a very, very sort of amazing book to read, especially if you've never been introduced to anything about the ego. What I love about this book in particular is that Tolle has no background in psychology. So as somebody who has a master's degree in psychology and practices as a therapist for many years, it's very interesting to hear someone talk about the inner workings of the human psyche in such a brilliant manner, who really doesn't have any training in it. What that tells me is that he actually knows it from a much higher level than the level of the intellect. And so basically what he's doing in these first four chapters is he's talking about that there's an urgency. There's an urgency for a transformation to occur. And the reason that there's an urgency for that to happen, for each of us individually, but also for us as a species, I'm going to read something from page 10. Science and technology have magnified the destructive impact that the dysfunction of the human mind has upon the planet, upon other life forms, and upon humans themselves. That's why the history of the 20th century is where that dysfunction, that collective insanity, if you will, can be most clearly recognized. A further factor is that this dysfunction is actually intensifying and accelerating. And then he goes on to give a whole lot of examples of how that is happening. And the reason that that's happening is because we have this, what he calls an inherited dysfunction, or a veil of delusion, or an error in the way that we live. And that error comes through what he is calling ego. And ego is basically just all the thought forms and the emotions and everything that we've been conditioned by our lives, our culture, our families. We're going to talk a lot more about what the ego is as we get into this. But I just wanted to say a couple of things about how he sees that inherited dysfunction and what happens when we begin to notice it. And I know a lot of people get really nervous about this because they think, oh God, I don't want to admit that I have this problem, because if I admit it, then it's going to be even more of a problem. So let's just pretend like we're okay, and let's just hope this gets better. That's not going to happen. And I'm going to read you from page 14 why. He says that pretty clearly. And how, actually, to get beyond that. To recognize one's own insanity is, of course, the arising of sanity, the beginning of healing and transcendence. A new dimension of consciousness had begun to emerge on the planet, a first tentative flowering. Those rare individuals, he's talking here about Jesus, Krishna, Buddha, Lao Tzu, those people who came first and gave us this wisdom, and everybody really thought they were nuts. And now lots of people are talking about it. So we really have grown, and we've got more growing to do. All those teachers, though, they all spoke of sin, of suffering, of delusion. They said, look how you live, see what you're doing, the suffering you create. Then they pointed to the possibility of awakening from this collective nightmare, this nightmare that we call normal human existence, and they showed us the way. And of course, the world was not ready for them, and in many ways, much of the world is not ready now. But it's like he said before, as each one of us raises our consciousness, as we each one of us faces the suffering within our own selves and gets present enough with it to allow it to shift, we make the way easier for everyone else. When Eckhart Tolle is talking about the new spirituality, I love what he says about it. He says, the new spirituality, the transformation of consciousness, is arising to a large extent outside of the structures of the existing institutionalized religions. Isn't that interesting? Because it's like it's outside the box. What we're doing hasn't been done before. It's like those flowers. It's new. We are becoming new. And so those of us who really focus on this constantly feel, you know, out in left field, way outside the box. And that's a good thing. You kind of have to. Because what David Hawkins is very clear about is 78% of humanity actually lives below the level of where they can tell truth from falsehood. So that means there's 22% of people on the whole planet who are actually responsible for awakening not only ourselves, but raising the level of consciousness enough so that those other 78% can rise up as well. One of the things that is important to understand to really be able to look at the ego without getting freaked out about it is to realize that being spiritual really has nothing to do with what you believe, but it has everything to do with your state of consciousness. And what I mean by that is how you experience yourself inside yourself, how you experience life. Are you at peace with it? Are you in harmony with it? Do you have a low level of unhappiness or misery going on? Do you feel at peace when you go to sleep or when you wake up? That's your inner state of consciousness. What level are you vibrating at in a general way? Because that determines how you act in the world and how you interact with others. And it doesn't really matter how strong your ego is or how weak it is or how in control it is. The truth is the ego is destined to dissolve. And I think that's one of the best, most hopeful, inspiring aspects of this book, is that there is an urgency of transformation for all of us. And yet the only thing standing in our way, the ego, is already destined to dissolve. I just think that's magnificent. The way Tolle puts that is, I'm reading from page 21, responding to a radical crisis that threatens our very survival, this is humanity's challenge now. A significant portion of the Earth's population will soon recognize, if they haven't already, that humanity is now faced with a stark choice, evolve or die. A still relatively small but rapidly growing population of humanity, a percentage of humanity, is already experiencing within themselves the breakup of the old egoic mind patterns and the emergence of this new dimension of consciousness. In fact, at the heart of the new consciousness lies the transcendence of thought, the newfound ability of rising above thought, of realizing a dimension within yourself that is infinitely more vast than thought. That's where the new heaven and the new earth comes in. When we realize that we are so much more than what we think or what we do or what we feel, when we realize that we are so much more than anything we've ever experienced, we're like those first flowers that started happening. And as more and more of us flower, pretty soon it creates the conditions where the flowering can be happening more and more for more and more people. And it's a good thing because that's where we're going to feel the peace, the joy, the beauty. That's where we're going to get to have what all of us know we want, which is to experience that state of love in us, around us, in all our interactions. We don't experience that because the ego doesn't know anything at all about love. The ego knows about control. It knows about fear. It knows a lot about suffering, but it doesn't know how to stop. And so that's what we're really doing with the first four chapters of this book, is we're looking at the ego and we're figuring out what it is so that we can allow it to be dismantled. So basically, it's the ego, the current state of humanity, actually. I want to read you again. This is totally talking on page 25 and 26. Underneath the surface appearance, everything is not only connected with everything else, but also with the source of all life out of which it came. Get that? That's what we miss by being identified with ego. That source of all life that we can see in a flower, that we can experience in puppies and children and new blades of grass if we get down and really look at them. That's what we miss by being caught and trapped in the ego. And so one of the ways that he says, one of the best ways to begin is to actually stop thinking so much, stop labeling everything. Begin to, instead of being possessed by thought, you get to be with the miracle that is actually who you are before thought, beyond thought. And he actually says that the quicker you are in attaching verbal or mental labels to things, people, or situations, the more shallow and lifeless your reality comes, and the more deadened you become to reality, to the miracle of life that continuously unfolds. He gives an actual exercise that I think is lovely, and that's just to sit with anything, a leaf, something you think is beautiful, and just look at it. Just be present with it, with your eyes, without naming it. Let all naming of it go. Let all description of it go. And just visually explore it with no words. You will find a very, very different connection with whatever that is that you are looking at. And so what he's saying, especially in this first chapter, is that we have to notice this ego. We have to become aware of it, and hopefully then become aware that it's illusion. It's Maya. It's delusion. It doesn't actually, it's not who we are. And the good news is that if you can recognize illusion as illusion, it dissolves. I mean, the recognition of illusion is its ending. Its survival depends on you mistaking it for reality. So in the seeing of who you are not, the reality of who you are emerges by itself. And so that's why it's important, and that's how it works. To notice, oh gosh, I've been unconscious. To notice, ooh, that's ego. Whoops, look, I'm labeling. To notice that when it arises is actually the consciousness arising, something beyond ego, because only something beyond ego can notice that. And so Tolle actually says that the meaning of being spiritually unconscious is to be completely identified with the incessant stream of mind, of compulsive thinking, most of it repetitive and pointless. There is no I apart from their thought processes and the emotions that go with them. So that's the definition of being spiritually unconscious, according to this enlightened being we call Eckhart Tolle, is to be totally identified with our mind and our thought processes. And so what he's doing, especially in this first part of this book, is showing you how to recognize that mind and to stop being so completely identified with it and controlled by it. That voice in the head, that's how a lot of us would recognize it. That voice in the head, the ego, it's completely conditioned by the past. It's conditioned by wanting and getting and then wanting more. Because the irony, if you will, about wanting is the wantingness is actually the structure of the ego. It doesn't matter what you get, you're just going to want more. And so you want, you get it, oh good, whoops, now I want more. And it's never ending, and it will always be never ending, because it doesn't matter what content is there. The actual structure of the ego is that wantingness. And I'm going to actually read, I love this quote from page 37. The unchecked striving for more, for endless growth, is a dysfunction and a disease. It is the same dysfunction the cancerous cell manifests, whose only goal is to multiply itself, unaware that it is bringing about its own destruction by destroying the organism of which it is a part. And that's what the ego does. Not because it's malicious, not because it's mean. It doesn't have any choice about it. That's what it is. The ego isn't wrong. It's just unconscious. It's not bad. It's just what it is. And so there's no blame. Trying to fight the ego is never going to work. There's no blame to be attached to the ego. It's just being what it is. If we just notice what it is and be present with what it is, what happens is compassion arises. And when compassion arises, we suddenly have the willingness to know who we are beyond ego because we experience it. And so what we do to reach that, to open up to that, is to actually let go the attachment to things by ceasing to identify with those things. Most of us identify with not only what we think and what we do and what our roles are in the world, but most of us really identify with what we have. You know, we identify with our stuff. And the way you know you're attached to stuff is if you lose it, you get upset. That's an attachment. If you're actually just not attached, you don't get upset. It's like, oh, okay. So that upset is an indication that you're actually attached. An attachment is something of the ego. It's not something of love. But I want to read you again something that he says about attachment. Because what's really clear from any spiritual people that you work with is that you can't make yourself stop thinking something. You can't make yourself let go of attachments. What you have to do is open up to something bigger than that. And then those attachments or those thoughts, those things that are actually not good for you, they just fall away. It's like bringing light into that dark room. What happens to the darkness? It just didn't even exist. It just goes away. It was just an absence of light. And so what Tolle says is that, I'm reading on page 45, attachment to things drops away by itself when you no longer seek to find yourself in them. In the meantime, just be aware of your attachment to things. If you are aware that you are identified with a thing, the identification is no longer total. I am the awareness that is aware that there is attachment. That's the beginning of the transformation of consciousness. Those are his words, not mine. But I want to say that again. Being aware of what the challenge is, being aware of what's going on in the pain body, being aware of the obsessive thought, being aware of whatever it is that's creating your suffering, being aware that you are actually doing that through your ego, through your thought processes, and being present with that, that's the beginning of the transformation of consciousness. And it's really important to, like, decline, I suppose, to get into a fight with ego, because that's just the ego fighting with itself. Consciousness would never fight with ego. There's nothing there to fight with. And so this wanting or needing more, this impatience that we have to be enlightened now, to feel good now, it's like that wantingness, that neediness, that's part of being identified with form, and that is always ego, because it's never ending. As Tolle says on page 48, no matter what you have or get, you won't be happy. You will always be looking for something else that promises greater fulfillment, that promises to make your incomplete sense of self complete and fill that sense of lack that you feel within. As long as you're coming from ego, that's what's going to be happening. If you're lost in ego, that is what's going to be happening. Another way that he puts it is, when every thought absorbs your attention completely, when you are so identified with the voice in your head and the emotions that accompany it that you lose yourself in every thought and every emotion, then you are totally identified with form and therefore in the grip of ego. Ego is a conglomeration of recurring thought forms and conditioned mental-emotional patterns that are invested with a sense of I, a sense of self. That's it. That's all it is. And so we can be lost in ego, or we can be free of ego. And Tolle gives a very simple way to be free of ego. It's simple once you realize what the ego is and how it works. First, and I'm reading, quoting here again, page 57, you realize your essential identity as formless, as an all-pervasive presence of being that is prior to all forms, all identifications. You realize your true identity as consciousness itself, rather than what consciousness has identified with. That's the peace of God. The ultimate truth of who you are is not I am this or I am that, but that I am. And so it's very simple in one way. In another way, you know, clearly it's difficult because many, many, many of us have been attempting to do it for a very long time and haven't actually, well, actually we have. We've grown a great deal, or we wouldn't even be having this conversation. Because you couldn't have had this conversation 25 or 30 years ago. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a little musical break. But what I want to do before that is I want to give you an exercise that Tolle talks about in this book. And it's very, very wonderful. It's called Feeling the Inner Body. And if you're not familiar with the inner body exercises or the awareness, then I'm just going to guide you through it for just a moment. So just close your eyes and find out if there's life inside your hands. Don't ask your mind. It's going to just tell you, probably not, or give me something more interesting to think about. So just go to your hands directly. Let your awareness be in your hands. And just become aware of that subtle feeling of aliveness inside your hands. It's definitely there. You just have to go there with your attention to notice it. You might get a slight tingling or a feeling of energy or aliveness. And just hold your attention in your hands for a while and see if that sense of aliveness intensifies. For some people, it helps to close their eyes. And just let that aliveness in your hands, just be aware of it. And if you can feel it in your hands, then notice it in your feet. And if you can feel it in your feet, then begin to notice it in other parts of your body. Just put your attention there and notice the sense of aliveness wherever it is that you put your attention. Of course, that's not really the inner body. It's really not the body anymore at all. It's the life energy that we are. And so I'm going to leave you with that little exercise to play with. And I am going to play just a little bit of music here for you to enjoy. And this is Billy McLaughlin. And the song is Sunshine. Enjoy.
Thank you.
And so can you feel what Tolle calls your inner body. Welcome back. This is UR Radio, and you're listening to Conscious Co-Creating, Tools to Empower You. This is Louisa Dyer, and I'm happy to be here with you this evening. We are talking about Eckhart Tolle and his book called A New Earth, Awakening to Your Life's Purpose, which has been a bestseller for quite a long time now. And we are looking at chapters 1 through 4, looking at what the ego is and how to awaken so that we are no longer controlled by the ego, because as long as we are, we don't get to be the happy, joyful, loving, peaceful, amazing people that we want to be, because the ego is not about that. The ego is very fearful, and it's about control, and it's very childish in a way, and you can't fight it. You can only grow beyond it. You can only transcend it. And the good news is that the ego is destined to dissolve, so we don't really have to worry about that, but we do have to do our own part of that if that's what we want to experience. So what we're really looking at here is what the ego is and what strengthens the ego and what allows it to dissolve. Because if we want to transcend the ego, then it would make sense that we would want to let go of those things that make the ego stronger and focus our attention on what allows presence to be stronger instead. And so one of the things that Tolle talks about a great deal in Chapter 3 in A New Earth is one of the things that makes the ego, the two things really he's talking about that make the ego grow stronger and stronger and stronger, is complaining and resentment. And it's like they're both the ego's favorite strategies for strengthening self. And it doesn't matter whether you complain aloud or whether your resentments are expressed outwardly or whether you're just holding it all inside. It makes no difference. The ego still thrives on complaining and on feeling resentful. And along with that, of course, goes the complaining. That's a form of that. The mental labeling of people or feeling resentful about situations. You know, what that really is about is that there's this implication that when we're in that ego state, we have that thought or those feelings that this should not be happening. I don't want to be here. I don't want to be doing this. I'm being treated unfairly. And of course, the ego's greatest enemy of all is the present moment, which is actually to say life itself. So whenever we notice that we're in that kind of state, we can know that ego is happy, 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 happy. And all we have to do is become aware that that's what's going on and just own it in the moment. And that allows presence to begin coming in. It requires honesty and courage, I think, to actually see that and to be willing to let it go. But boy, is the it's so worth it. I'm going to actually read you something that he says because I think this is so important. And we're going to talk about grievance here, but he could be talking about thoughts. He could be talking about complaining. He could be talking about any of the negative emotions or the negative thinking at all. He says, "Don't try to let go of the grievance. Trying to let go, to forgive, does not work. Forgiveness happens naturally when you see that it has no purpose other than to strengthen a false sense of self, to keep the ego in place. The seeing is freeing. The past has no power to stop you from being present now. Only your grievance about the past can do that. And what is a grievance? The baggage of old thought and emotion." And, you know, I am just noticing the time. And we are almost out of time. It just amazes me how fast it goes. So I'm going to wrap it up just by saying that the ego loves nothing more than being right, because it puts you in this imagined moral superiority, and the ego craves that. But what you have to know is that the ego is not personal. It's not your identity. Your identity is actually something that is formless and infinite. And the ego is just like a trick. And there's many, many faces of ego. And as you begin to notice the ego in you and become willing to face it and to be aware of it, which is what lets your awareness your consciousness transcend the ego. A lot of times your answer to, you know, who you are or what's going on for you might be, I don't know. And that is a really, really, really good place to be. It's a much better place to be than it is to hide behind a role. I'm a this or I'm a that. Much better to not know and to really accept not knowing. And we really can give up the role playing, the complaining. We really can become aware of the ego itself. And in that moment of becoming aware, then awareness has increased and ego begins to dissolve. And what I want to leave you with here tonight is at the end of chapter 4 in A New Earth, Tolle talks about the secret of happiness. And I think it's really beautiful and wonderful for us to remember this. And I'm just going to leave you with this. The ego doesn't know that your only opportunity for being at peace is now. Or maybe it does know, and it is afraid that you may find this out. Peace, after all, is the end of the ego. So how to be at peace now? By making peace with the present moment. The present moment is the field on which the game of life happens. It cannot happen anywhere else. Once you have made peace with the present moment, see what happens, what you can do or choose to do, or rather what life does through you. There are three words that convey the secret of the art of living, the secret of all success and happiness. One with life. Being one with life is being one with now. You then realize that you don't live your life, but life lives you. Life is the dancer, and you are the dance. Don't you just love that? Life is the dancer, and you are the dance. So I'm just going to leave you with that thought, that you are the dance, that life is dancing. And I want to say thank you very much for joining me this evening. I have had a wonderful time, and I hope you join me here next Thursday evening from 8 to 9 Eastern. And I am going to spend the next hour playing some really fantastic music, and we're going to start that off with another song from my favorite group, Here to Hear. This song is called Your Dreams, and it's one of the most brilliant songs about how reality works and how we create that I've ever heard. I really hope you enjoy it.